This is HPR episode 2090 entitled, A Docker Dialogue. It is hosted by Thaj Sara and is about 33 minutes long. The summary is, Thaj and Lyle X1101 have a discussion about Docker and its use.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by anhonesthost.com. Get 15% discount on all shared hosting with the offer code HPR15. That's HPR15. Better web hosting that's honest and fair at anhonesthost.com.
What's good, Hacker Public Radio? This is Taj, and I'm here with a new episode, and I'm actually joined by my buddy and cohort from the You Random podcast, X1101, better known as Lyle.
Howdy, folks.
And we're going to kind of do two episodes together, but this is going to be the first one. I got a hold of X1101 because I wanted to talk about Docker, and I know that that's a huge thing that he deals with his work now. And so I was just looking for some answers. And so I guess the best place to start would be to go back and to the beginning and talk about why I wanted to talk about Docker and just my noobishness regarding the whole thing. So about 3 years ago, the Google Reader shutdown happened. And that was the moment when I realized that I was really needed to be all in on this free and open source train because I was being... Things weren't going the way I wanted them to because the company owned it and I had no control over what was going on. And the problem was when I looked at alternatives, all the alternatives I was capable of using was a service that I had to go to somebody else to use and, you know, or pay for or just give somebody else my data. And the same thing could just happen again. And that bothered me. So I decided I'm going to learn how to self-host things. Now, prior to this, I am a user very much. Everything's GUI. Just using the computer. I was using Linux. I was comfortable there. I could use the command line, but I knew nothing about networking, really didn't understand how servers worked. I was just like, they're cool, and I'm going to start. So I did that. I learned from basically reading, you know, wikis and websites on how to build the server from scratch. And what I did was I eventually put up several applications on my server, got it to where I could get to it wherever I wanted, and it was wonderful. Everything I wanted was exactly where it needed to be. About a year ago, I wanted to start playing with new self-hosted things, and I really didn't know how to add any more to the server I already had without, you know, doing Apache and Nginx at the same time, and it was just going to get to be a nightmare. And then I started reading about Docker containers. And I guess for people who don't know what a Docker container is, a Docker container is just kind of like a smaller little computer that you put in your big computer. And it does everything that the bigger computer would do, but it's self-contained and it's portable and it's really just a little ball of awesome. And so I learned how to start a Docker container and read up on them and watched the videos, which are very helpful, and learned about it. What happened this past week, I went to update said server, which had been running great for 3 years, because I was really behind. It was on an Ubuntu base, which is Ubuntu. And I went to upgrade it, and it totally destroyed everything. So my server basically fell to pieces. I'm a big rolling release fan, especially on my normal computers. So I decided that I was going to do rolling release on my server. And to do this, I was going to run rolling release and then do all my applications as Docker containers. And for the most part, I understood the basics of how to get these Docker containers running. But some of the nuances for some of the applications that I wanted to work with, I really didn't know what I was doing. And so I've been on this path to try to figure that out. And that's why I brought X1101 here. And we're going to talk about that tonight. So what do you think about that, Lyle?
Well, there is one thing you said that I want to kind of elaborate on, because you said something that's not wrong, but it's not all the way right. And the way you talked about Docker is you were kind of talking about it the way as if it were virtualization, but it runs on top of a virtualization stack, but that's not what it is. you know, smaller computers inside your computer. That's standard virtualization. We've had that for a decade and a half or something. VMware, Xen, Hyper-V, KVM, you name it. And VirtualBox, all of them. And those are part of the Docker infrastructure, but not environment, but not really the magic. And then you really hit on the second part is they're self-contained. They're transportable. They're kind of atomic. And one of the other nice things is they're layered. So when you build a Docker machine, that machine most likely has dependencies way up the stack until you get to the Linux base that it's on. And that actually has a bunch of dependencies. So it's this layered union file system where each layer contributes a little bit. So, you know, you say you want, you know, the PHP Docker container. Well, that contains the Apache container, which contains the Ubuntu container, which contains all this other Linux file system containers. And a change in one of those, you rebuild and it propagates all the way downstream without you having to do anything. And it's really cool. But it's not virtualization so much as it's kind of this in-between space between virtualization and the classic container concept like cheroots.
Yeah, and that was one of the big stumbling blocks for me is one of the first things that when I started learning about Docker, I went to what is essentially our local lug. It's not really a lug. It's they call it a open source society, or I forget exactly how it's how they termed themselves, but basically it's a lug. Most of the people there are familiar with Linux and they use it. A lot of them are sysadmins or developers. The one thing that I got from talking to them, which was really at the beginning of Docker, I kind of came in, I guess, right at the ground floor when it was starting. And the one thing I heard them say is standard practice is you never keep your data inside a container. And so that has always scared me. And that was one of the things that I was super worried about when I started doing this, because I know nothing about databases. I know how to put up a LAMP stack, and I know that MySQL's in there and I can install it, but what it does from there and how that interacts with different containers, I had no idea. And so that was the first place that I kind of got stuck. And I know that that is sort of changed a little bit, or at least it seems that way. It seems like it's okay to keep your data in a container, well, so, but not the same container as the container you're doing your stuff with or something like that.
Well, see, you're conflating your data with a database. A database is just a way you access your data. When they're talking about not keeping your data in the same place in a container, what they mean is the actual files that back it up. So you may have a MySQL Docker container, but the files that back up that MySQL database, the NODB files or the, I don't know how it's stored for the IASM databases, those are linked into the container. They are not stored in the container. So if you were to, you know, bundle up your app and ship it to me, you would have to either send me those files separately or I don't have your data. So it's really, and this is how I use it for work too, is you're breaking the connection between your application, your code, and your data. So your Docker machines are a way to access your data. They do not contain your data. Now, as you said, that is changing where they'll have specific Docker machines as part of a Docker kind of cluster that those exist to store data. But most of those are just connecting to a backend data source to present a more convenient interface.
Yeah, and the reason that I kind of got the impression that that was changing is because a lot of when I started doing this, you would do, there's a -v for volumes command, which I was like voodoo to me. I had no idea how it worked, and I was totally guilty of the cardinal sin of, here's some code, copy and paste it in and see what happens to get some things running before. But it seems like that has kind of been replaced in most of the containers that I saw. And when I'm looking at containers, I'm not building these containers. These are containers that I'm going to like Docker Hub and pulling down. And I usually go with the trusted ones, the ones that are made by the company. So like one of the things that we've put on my server that we use is Mattermost. And so I go with Mattermost's official Docker container. And one of the thing that keeps popping up is where, as far as the databases, they are having you start a container and then using the link command to link it to a database container. And I don't know, because what you were saying earlier is like the layers on top of each other inside a container. It seems like it's almost like they're taking some of the layers and moving them to their own containers. Is that?
No, possibly. You could run all of it in one as if you were running an entire LAMP stack in one container. But when you get to the microservices world, that's kind of the wrong way to do it. You want to put your web server, and if your web server is different than your backend application server, you separate those, and you separate your database server, you separate all of them into different Docker images. And then you use, and this is where this is a perfect place to bring up, Docker Compose. And so you're talking about using, you know, the volume command and the link command all in this one nasty looking Docker command line. And that's one way to do it. But the more modern way, and the Docker group is, I don't know how old it is. It's most of the time that I've been working with Docker, which has really only been a few months, but it's kind of an everyday thing. So a few months adds up quickly, is Docker Compose. And so you basically use this, and it's all YAML, which is it's yet another markup language, as its name suggests.
Is that literally what it stands for?
Yes. Yes, it is.
That's
and
awesome.
Tools like Docker and Ansible and other Python adjacent tools use this kind of same language. But so you define a YAML file that says, okay, I want to start this Docker container and this Docker container, and I want to connect them in this way, and I want to put these volumes on this one, and I want to set these environment variables. So it's a way to take a standard container, adjust it to your needs, and build an entire application stack out of containers, all from a single, easily passable file.
Now, is a Docker Compose file sort of analogous to, because the way you're explaining it, and I'll be honest, you brought up Docker Compose, and I went and did a little research on it, and it kind of was a little bit over my head. And so I was just like, I kind of need to get things running, so I just went with the way I understood how to do it. But I kind of do, because Docker Compose seems to be the new hotness, I do want to get there.
It is very much the hotness.
To me, that sounds like a Docker file, but
no,
string a bunch of them together.
It references Docker files. So this is, okay, think about a Docker file defines an individual server, for lack of a better word, or service is really what we're talking about. It defines a service. The Docker Compose file defines all of the services you need to bundle an application and how they're connected and what goes in with them. So you define your Apache container and the volumes it needs and the ports it needs and the environment variables it needs. And you define your database container and all of those same things with it. And you talk about how they're linked. Because you could actually have a Docker Compose file with, you know, 100 Docker machines in it, but if you don't tell them to connect to each other, you've got 100 different machines, not 100 machines that are interconnected.
So you've said this a couple times, that you would use like Docker Compose to create an application. Would you use Docker Compose to do multiple applications that share the same kind of structure or like connected in some way?
Let's stick with your Mattermost example and talk through it a little bit. So let me get in my head exactly how the Mattermost stack works. Is that is it served via Apache or Nginx or something, or is it a standalone application?
It's as far as I know, it's standalone. And Mattermost is actually one of the interesting ones, even though I used it as my example for the link command. It's actually one that doesn't have the link command. It has everything in itself. Like, you just run the Mattermost machine or the container, and it just, everything spins up. So I'm assuming inside that container, there is either Apache or Nginx, you know, and what I do is I just use the -P flag and assign that to whatever port I want it to go to. And in this case, Mattermost has a standard port, and so that was open, so I just used that one. But as far as what's in that container without going into the container, I actually don't know.
Okay, so if you were doing that with Docker Compose, what you would do is you would have your, we'll assume that it's using either Apache or Nginx, some kind of web server. So you'd have your web server container, and in that container, it would have the configuration to install and stand up Mattermost. That would all be in one container. And then it would have your database container, not your file system stuff, but your actual database in another container. And it would link those two containers together. and then probably your database container if you wanted to be able to persist it between times bringing it up, which you kind of do. That would be where you would link in storage so that your MySQL files are written to a persistent storage on disk and connected to the database whenever you start those containers. So that would be how you would re-architect the existing thing to use Compose.
So when I'm pulling down like a prepackaged container, there's a pretty good possibility that that's what they've done on their end to create it.
No. When you're pulling down a container, it is a container because you're pulling down a Docker file, not a Docker Compose file.
So, okay. So the difference between those two things is a container is literally what it is. It's a self-contained one thing. Spin that up, everything runs. It may have multiple things installed within inside that container, but it is just one container, to where Docker Compose is, I'm going to string these containers together to create something bigger. Is that, am I on the right track?
Yes. And so let me give an example of the way kind of we use it. I'm a DevOps engineer at a development shop. And the way we use it is, so we've got, you know, 4, 5, 7 developers working on one project. And that project needs a web server and a database and a search engine server and like a utility server. So that's 4 machines. So what you do is you'll determine, so we'll go get the Apache Docker file and the database Docker file and the search engine Docker file, and then kind of like a generic Ubuntu Docker file. And then we'll write a Docker Compose file that connects all of them together, and we'll put all of that into a Git repo and pass it around. So you run Docker Compose up and it spins up, it, you know, pulls down your Apache server and your database server and your search server and your util server, builds those individual containers and then links them together in the way that you've told them to build an entire application, a delivered application, not, you know, Apache is an application, but I'm talking about an entire completed application ready for someone to use.
Yeah, I am kind of jealous whenever I see, whenever I was researching Docker Compose, and when it was just like, you know, Docker Compose up was the command that they were using. I was, when I look at my commands to start my stuff, it's like a mile long, and I was very jealous of that.
Mostly what you've done is you've taken that command that looks like it's trying to summon a great old one, putting it into a YAML file, and then just starting the YAML file.
So, and this is just me not knowing, what is the benefit of doing that as opposed to running it all in one container?
Well, it's more closely aligned to the microservices concept, where you build an individual machine for a purpose so that your web server and your database server are distinct. That allows you to, and when you get into larger deployments, you're thinking about things like, well, I need 4 web servers and 3 database servers and 2 search servers. And it gets harder to scale if you've got all of that bundled to one machine versus if you've got each service spun out on its own machine.
Okay, that makes sense. Because like the first half of that explanation, I heard, the Unix philosophy, one tool for one job, and then just string them together what you want it to do. And then the second half makes sense. It may be a scale thing. If I'm trying to do something much larger, it would be impractical to do it in one container. That makes sense.
So the TLDR, the Unix philosophy because scale.
Dig it.
So have I kind of given you answers to your questions and pointed you in some better directions?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely, one of the things that just boggled my mind when I started doing this is a lot. And even there's tons of really cool stuff that I guess whoever is in charge of Docker, I think you said maybe the Docker Foundation or whoever that is, they put out tons of tutorials. There's actually a live site where you can go in and start playing with it, where you're like, okay, this is how you spin up a container, and it shows you. And I learned everything pretty much from that and from their YouTube videos. But the biggest problem I had is I'm more than a noob, but less than a sysadmin. And the noob stuff they've got covered really well. And the sysadmin stuff they've got covered really well. It's that weird in-between part where it's a lot of it's terminology. Even in some of the tutorials, they're using sysadmin terminology that I just don't understand. I'm just like, I don't understand what you're saying. And I'll go look it up. And I'm like, it's using more sysadmin terminology that I don't know. And so it's just sort of this snowball where the concepts kind of get too big to wrap your head around. And so, yeah, like this conversation has helped a lot because like we were talking about, you know, the biggest thing in the world that threw me was that dash V or the V flag for volumes. And like, what the hell does that mean? I understood that I could reach out into the base operating system and pull files and stuff. But the way you've explained it kind of helps me a little bit more with that and why I would use that. And the fact that actually now I'm not using that at all in any of the containers that I did, because I could take the data from the thing and export it out, and it's basically a backup for me.
Well, and I don't know specifically with the volumes command, but I know another option for storing your data, and you would set this up in your containers, would be to actually backend everything through a service that you don't host yourself, or when you do. You know, in my case, we're very much into the AWS world, and so if we want to store files somewhere to persist them and not persist them on the server so that we can scale better, you throw them in an S3 bucket.
Yeah, and I can see that. And I think a lot of, to me, I get in this loop where I'm worried that I know enough to get myself in trouble and to do something really stupid. To me, with all the stuff, running everything in one container kind of scared me because of all the warnings I heard about the data, and, you know, separating out the idea of the data and the database is important. I mean, until tonight, I didn't really understand that difference, and that's good. But
just remember the Unix philosophy in that everything is a file. So you may have a database, but that is just software to organize and access your data. Your data still has to be written on disk somewhere, which means it has to be in a file.
Right, and that makes sense, because I'm looking at, I just installed Nextcloud. I had OwnCloud, and I love OwnCloud, but Nextcloud apparently is the new hotness, just like Docker Compose. And so I loaded Nextcloud, and it has a database that it has internally, but the data it's pulling is off of the rotating drive, and I have to set that up. And that's part of the commands in that big, long string that you were saying. It's like invoking the old ones. And that data is still on the disk. And so that I didn't understand that, but now I do. Like, that makes sense that I'm doing that.
And I just want to put a disclaimer out there that, as I said, I have not been doing it this long. It's just, you know, looking at it every day. So if somebody thinks they know better than me, either do a follow-up show and yell at me, or, you know, I'm on IRC most days. You can find me lurking around. Come yell at me. Tell me I'm wrong. I'm happy to have a discussion with somebody.
I think one of the things that has become clearer to me is that Docker is kind of different things for different people, where some of the contexts you're using it in are different. I'm kind of using it realist. I mean, boiling it down to brass tacks, I'm using it as an application store, and I'm just downloading applications and kind of using it as like a universal application installer, and just being able to do that, that has way more options than a normal app install would. And that's a little different than building an entire application from the bottom up, but yet this is capable of doing both. And that's interesting. And I think what got me off track is maybe I was listening to people in sort of a different context, and they were trying to show me things. And even like Docker Compose, that may not be something that I'm using yet, but it's probably something I will once I understand where I'm going. Like, my next thing I want to learn how to do with Docker is I want to start learning how to build these containers myself, instead of relying on somebody else to do it, because then I understand what's going on. One of the problems I don't like about it is it's kind of a black box right now for me.
Well, and, you know, even if you're building it yourself, you would only build the top layer. You know, this is kind of the perfect invocation of the standing on the shoulders of giants analogy, because you literally, every layer is built on the layer above it or below it, whichever direction you want. And so you keep building. So you only customize the last layer. You say, I need. So you were building a web server, you would say, I need the Apache Docker file, and then manually put in, okay, and then I need PHP, and I need SSL, and whatever. And that's why it works both as an application store, because, you know, you've got your application, Nextcloud, Mattermost, whatever. You can say, I need this thing, and I need that thing, and I need this other thing to run. And it pulls all those in, and then all you have to do is put your secret sauce on the top, or your sauce on the top layer. And then I, as, you know, someone who is building those applications, can do the same thing and then put my sauce on the top layer. So we're leveraging the same framework to achieve different kinds of goals.
Yeah, it's one of those tools that to me seems amazingly powerful. And I guess some people could argue that really, if you were a package maintainer, you're kind of doing the same thing, even in a traditional application thing. But the fact that I can do all this and hand it, you know, I can do it on Arch, and I can hand it to somebody who runs Ubuntu, and they can run it just right off the top. That's, to me, that's super powerful.
Well, and you can put your work in a Git repo and publish it on GitHub. And all I have to do is Git clone your repo and rock and roll, because you're not putting the data there. Most of that data is either in a public or private Docker Hub.
And it's funny you say that, because the Mattermost container that I pulled down, which is the official Mattermost container, there was a problem, and they knew there was a problem. And so I went to the GitHub and I put in an issue, and it literally, the guy was back with me in a couple hours, and he was like, do a Git pull on this and run it and see if it, and it fixed it. And so you get that benefit of having sort of that open source ethos going on.
And if you come at it again from the larger scale application development framework, if you're just using Docker, you can move the same Docker instance from one developer to 10 developers to a staging environment to a production environment in one of several clouds. With the latest releases of Docker, it's still in beta right now. You can now run native Docker without kind of the need of a virtualization shim in the middle on OS X and Windows, as well as on Linux. So that means, you know, you could run Docker machines, AWS, Google Cloud, Rackspace, Azure. Pretty much this at this point, if they have a public cloud, you can probably run your Docker stuff in it. So it gives you some portability there. That's really cool.
So as cool as that is, what instantly just went through my mind when you said I could do this on Windows was that terrible Windows computer that I have to use at work. You mean I could pull down an Arch Docker container and basically have Arch on my Windows machine? That sounds awesome.
You could already do that with VirtualBox. What I'm telling you is you could pull down Mattermost or Nextcloud and run a local Nextcloud server from your Windows machine. And you could do that before, because I've done it and it's ugly and it's terrible. But you could do that before. They've just made it suck less.
So they're going as completely cross-platform as they can. That's got to be crazy on the back end to be able to pull that off.
Well, OS X and Windows both have native virtualization, so I think it's still just virtualizing Linux. It just, before, it kind of depended on VirtualBox. So what you would do is you would install the official Docker for Windows, really installed Docker, VirtualBox, and Git. And this just rips the VirtualBox port part out and uses the native virtualization. So I think it still virtualizes a Linux machine underneath.
Yeah, all this stuff is so cool to me. I mean, this, like I said, this is my goal, is to get better at this, because I think it's, especially from the server perspective, one of the things that I liked about the Docker containers more than the traditional kind of install your apps, install your LAMP stack, and then install your apps was, when my operating system got completely messed up, I would have to go through and set all these things back up. Where now, the way it is, and since I'm on a rolling release, I'm on an Arch derivative, if my operating system dies, I learned about a command, just, it's called the export command, where you can just export your Docker containers. And my goal is to get this set up this week, is to basically set up a script that is a cron job that just fires off this export for all my containers. And it basically takes whatever state that container is in and puts it in a tarball and just dump that down to my backup. And then, worst case scenario, I reload the operating system on my server, which would take, you know, all of maybe an hour, worst case scenario, and then just fire off a script, and everything that I had is back up right where it was before. That kind of portability is amazing. And to have a little more insight on how that works and how to do that with things that aren't already done is definitely where I want to go with it. So I guess, is there any other words of wisdom you wish to impart on me before I go on my journey of Docker craziness?
It's cool. Keep going.
That's what I feel. And I will be, like most things that I've in the free and open source realm, everyone I've encountered and talked to, and I've reached out to several people involved this week, just because I was in a little over my head, and I was trying to do this because I knew the idea is something I wanted to do, but the knowledge to do that idea was a little lacking. everybody was super friendly. I never once did I have an encounter where somebody wasn't willing to bend over backwards to help me out. So I feel like it's a pretty good community too. And so I'm looking forward to it, man. Hopefully this will spur some people into trying out some Docker containers. Because you can, I play with them on my laptop all the time. And like you said, I have just my own little instance of something running on my laptop. So it's definitely something I want to play with. And I think other people should do too.
I want to take a minute and plug our other project. I'm actually going to be, one of my goals, I don't know if it'll be this month, next month, sometime this summer, I hope, is taking all of the stuff needed to build and host the URandom site and get it in a couple of Docker containers.
I can't wait for that. That's going to be so awesome.
Because again, the code lives in Git. Then the only thing we're pulling in is all of the tools to build it in one machine and all the tools to host it in another, and then a pipeline to kind of move code between them.
I mean, just looking at the code that's already there, I'm not a coder. I can read a little bit, but I mean, I can follow along enough to see what is happening, especially with the site. Is it Nicola, the engineer? Yeah. Using?
Nicola is freaking awesome.
And just seeing how everything is separated out and how very Unix-y it is, I think, how everything's just broken apart. I think it's going to be cool when it's a Docker container, because then I could literally just spin up the whole flow on my laptop if I wanted to, just to see what happens.
And that's the point. And the idea would be, you know, you'd run it on your laptop, I'd run it on my desktop, we'd run it on the server, and it's the same stuff everywhere.
It makes redundancy really, really, really easy.
No, so that's all I've got on Docker.
All right, cool. So like he was saying, if you're so inclined, you can check out myself and Lyle and Pokey on our podcast, which is called URandom. It's urandom-podcast.info, correct?
Correct.
It's just three dudes getting together, talking about random stuff, as you would probably assume from the title. It's a lot of fun, so you should come check it out. And everybody within the sound of my voice should do an episode on Hacker Public Radio, because they need episodes. And obviously all it takes is to get two guys that kind of know some stuff to get on Mumble and hit the record button and publish. It's not hard. So you should do it.
Indeed.
All right. And with that, I will say later.
Peace out.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club, and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.